Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 192nd edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective, our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com. Everyone, chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss things amongst yourselves if you like. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer the best of my ability as I can. And a big thing that happened yesterday in New York City, the big, big television contract that Major League Soccer and U.S. Soccer signed with ESPN, Fox Sports, and Univision Deportes. I believe I have on the line right now Steve Laporte from Awful Announcing, who is there. Steve, are you there? I guess I do not have Steve at the moment, so we'll just have to wait and see when he does come on. But we have a guest, I believe, who is on the line now, 916-798.
Daniel, it's Frankie. How are you?
Hi, Frankie. How is it going?
Oh, back to full health here, so feeling much better.
Good, good, good. Need you at 5:30 Pacific, Frankie. So if you just give me a call back then, we'll talk about Sacramento.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you very much. And that's Frankie DeVay, who will be with us at 5:30 Pacific, 8:30 Eastern, to talk about the Sacramento Republic. Got a little confused there, but that's okay. It's all right, so it's not a big deal. But anyway, as talking about before here on the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show, is that this big contract that just came in yesterday, live and here in New York City, the big television deal that sees Major League Soccer along with U.S. Soccer for 8 full years, a combined $90 million a year that Major League Soccer is going to try and benefit from both their partner since 1996, ESPN, and now Fox Sports getting involved. And that also means a solid night of soccer for the United States soccer fans. For us U.S. soccer fans and MLS fans, that we're finally going to get a dedicated time to watch the sport back-to-back games on a single night. And, you know, I have to say that for me, this is a no-brainer. It's a great deal. I'm very, very happy to see Major League Soccer finally coming through, finally making it big here in the American sports television landscape, because this is the one thing that our league needed. This is the one thing that our league truly needed to finally get on the map and become solid. And now joining me on the line is the gentleman that was there over at the arena where the MLS and U.S. Soccer held their press conference, Mr. Matt Laporte, excuse me, Steve Laporte from Awful Announcing, who was there. Steve, thank you for the time and welcome to the show.
Thank you guys for having me. How you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing all right over here. You know, Steve, finally, you know, as an American soccer fan, there, you know, you've seen it, I've seen it, many have seen it. There's always been this jumping around days, times, what fits into our calendars, and we all know that there's always going to be, you know, baseball that will always be with Major League Soccer, and then when you get to the end of the MLS season, the college football starts, the NFL season starts around August, September. But in your mind, what does this new deal mean for soccer fans in the United States when it comes to MLS?
It means appointment viewing, and it means appointment viewing all around the weekend, because it means that MLS is going to schedule their entire season around three nights, going to schedule their entire season in a format where you're going to get, supposedly, it won't always be, but you're going to try and get the two best games of the week from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Sundays, and you're going to get an extra game on Friday nights on Univision, which will have English audio, by the way. I think that's one of the more overlooked aspects of this deal, is that Univision telecasts will have English audio options and will essentially be full national games. You're going to have a national game on Friday, and then all of the other soccer is going to be built around Saturday and built around sustaining that club culture that MLS has done such a great job of building.
Now, you've had on the dais not just Dan Flynn, who is the Secretary General of U.S. Soccer, Don Garber, the Commissioner of the League, John Skipper, who's the President of ESPN as well as the Co-Chairman of Disney Media Networks. You had Eric Shanks, who's the Co-President of Fox Sports, along with Juan Carlos Rodriguez of Univision Deportes. He's the President of the channel. What does it mean to have these three men on the dais with Don Garber to discuss this landmark deal?
Well, John Skipper is one of the truly interesting figures in sports media, at least from my perspective. He's a sort of dorky, older Southern man in his 50s with Mr. Peabody glasses, and he wore khakis to the World Cup presser we had a couple of weeks ago. And you hear him talk about all this TV jargon in a wilted Southern accent. It's really funny. He's an incredibly intelligent man who's incredibly passionate about soccer. He and his sons actually went in a van in South Africa in 2010 and pretty much drove around the country and saw a game a day. They're going to do something similar this year. John Skipper is a big believer in soccer, and when he talks about MLS as a futures buy, he means that he believes that MLS will be more valuable to them at the end of this deal than, you know, maybe the money would say it is now. They're buying in at a certain price, and they're saying that they're going to get back on their return, and more so, it's going to be more valuable by the time the contract ends. Having Fox Sports 1 involved is a little bit lesser, because Fox Sports 1 will take whatever programming they can get. They'll take whatever entry into soccer they can get at this point. You know, an upstart network, believing in them is important, too. And having multiple partners can often be important, because when you see leagues aren't necessarily commanding the money from one corporation to go under one roof, having separate networks and having, you know, cross-promotion is going to help. Having, you know, ESPN's ability to market the game on FS1 that's coming up next is going to be huge for FS1. It's going to be huge for MLS. So it brings a lot of cross-promoting opportunities, but especially having ESPN's belief in the domestic league is very important.
You know, I had Matt Yoder on from your website, and we were wondering what the holdup was with this deal. Why did it take so long? Are the digital rights really that important in this deal that it sounds like this will be the last year of MLS Live on the website, and you're going to see basically ESPN take over the whole thing?
Well, MLS Live will still be available, I believe, to people who are cord cutters, or people who, you know, don't have cable or don't have satellite. We refer to them as cord cutters in this industry, and they're a very interesting topic for another day. But the digital rights were not necessarily what was holding things up. What I'm told from a couple of sources is that what was holding things up was sort of this battle over, you know, solid time slots, flex scheduling, and playing games at a certain time. You'd be surprised to hear a lot of MLS teams are not crazy about playing on Saturdays at 3 o'clock. Because I'll even take you back, and I'll even quote you on someone. John Miller, who's one of the top people at NBC, we were sitting together in Stamford, Connecticut, in their studios on the opening day of the Premier League season last August. And he said he loves MLS, but the problem is some of the smaller markets and some of the Midwestern markets don't want to play after Premier League because they think Saturday afternoon games hurts their gate, hurts the revenue that they make. And that proved to be one of the themes, really, of the whole negotiation, is that this sort of battle between the mid-market teams and the bigger market teams for things like flex scheduling, for things like playing in earlier time slots or playing in a different time slot. And then you have the whole other aspect of this, which is U.S. national team rights, which is something that, well, let's be honest here, is the actual prize in this deal. Fox and ESPN wanting those badly. Fox especially wanting those because they have the World Cup in 2018 and 2022, and ESPN in a reverse wanting those because, hey, we'll keep you out of all the big games before all those World Cups in 2018 and 2022. A lot of factors. As John Skipper said a couple of weeks ago, I've never been on the precipice of a deal for 6 months, but we're still on the precipice of a deal. And we finally jumped over that precipice and finally reached a deal to where we are today.
You know, I have to say that, you know, NBC has done, production-wise, a fantastic job with MLS. Obviously, they wanted the Premier League, and they've done a fantastic job running the Premier League here, not just in the States, but over in England as well. Do you think that those small intangibles that John Miller was telling you about, do you think that's the reason why NBC is no longer in the running with MLS to maybe be a third partner in this possibly?
Well, you're not going to get three partners just because, you know, two is – I mean, the NBA desperately wants to start – have a third partner in their new television deal, and the price is going to be hundreds of millions of dollars, and it's probably going to be either Fox Sports 1 or NBC, but you're at the point where the NBA is just now getting to a third partner. MLB has three partners, sort of. They have, you know, two primary partners during the regular season and two primary partners during the playoffs. But the NFL is pretty much everywhere, but they're the NFL. So you're probably only going to get two partners. I think, honestly, the price was a little too high for NBC, and I think they looked at the price and they looked at the ratings that they were getting, not just when games were scheduled all over the place, but when they scheduled games consistently after Premier League on Saturdays, that between the ratings and the cost, it just wasn't worth it to do the deal once they got Premier League.
Yep, it looks like it. And I just want to say thank you, NBC, for these 3 years for showing some very good jobs out there producing Major League Soccer, not just on NBC Sports Network as well as the national channel on NBC. You know, do you see Fox Sports? Because I'll be honest with you, I don't have a problem with, I would say, the people who are going to give you the analysis or maybe the play-by-play, because I think Rob Stone, Warren Barton, and Brian McBride, as well as Eric Winald, I think they'll do a great job in the studio, depending on what's going to be or who's going to be the play-by-play tandem at the stadiums. But I have a problem with how it's been produced, these soccer games on Fox Sports 1 and formerly at Fox Soccer Channel. Do you think NBC is going to force Fox Sports 1 to up their game?
Well, I'm a little more skeptical on Fox's coverage of soccer than you are. I am not necessarily a big fan of Eric Winald or Warren Barton. The fact is they'll get things wrong on a very frequent basis. I have a buddy of mine who will often, our G-chats are very long during, you know, Champions League coverage, where he'll just say, Waldo just said this wrong. He said this wrong. And it'll go on for the entire broadcast. So I love Rob Stone. I think he's great. I think he's a great ambassador for the sport in this country and a great host. But I don't necessarily even know if he'll be hosting MLS on Fox, just because Rob has a very extensive college football and college basketball schedule, and you combine that with the Champions League, he may just not have time to do it. You may see someone like Julie Stewart Binks, who is very hardworking and getting better and better at her job and was sort of unfairly saddled with a daily soccer show on an upstart network with analysts who I don't necessarily think are the best, but I think she'll be a good host if they go with her. I don't know who any of the talent is going to be. I asked them about Gus Johnson. They were noncommittal and pointed out that he's very busy as well with his year-round schedule. You would hope NBC would force Fox to get better, but you would also think NBC would have already forced Fox to get better with their Champions League coverage. That has not necessarily been great. So, yeah, would I expect Fox to get better because NBC is no longer in MLS? I would expect. Will it happen? That's a lot harder question to answer, and a question that won't be answered until March or April of next year.
Awesome. Steve, listen, thank you for the time. I really appreciate it. Hope to have you back on to talk some more about this new contract. And have a good night, and thank you for taking the invitation.
Anytime, Dan.
All right. Steve Lepore over at Awful Announcing. as we are on our way here on the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. And now joining me is the one and only Juan Arango, South American superstar journalist that knows everything up and down the South American continent. Juan, thank you for the time and welcome to the show.
Yo, what's up, man? How's it going?
That's going great, man. The Copa America, finally. The 2016 Copa America is coming to the U.S., and it's the 100th anniversary of South American football. This is a great tournament. I've seen many, many times either on YouTube or at least on when it was on Gold TV. I just think this is a great, great moment, not just for South America, but for everyone here in the U.S. to see live and in person at these stadiums what it means when you have some of the best talented players in South America coming to the U.S.
I don't think I can add anything more, man. I mean, you and what Jeffrey Webb said the other day pretty much, encapsulates what's going on. I mean, Jeffrey Webb said this was going to be the biggest sporting event since the 2002 Olympic Games in Salt Lake. Maybe a little bit smoother and a little bit more transparent, yeah. But it's going to be probably the biggest event since then and the biggest football-related event since the 1994 World Cup. So, I mean, that's pretty much all it says. I mean, that says pretty much everything about this whole deal between CONCACAF and CONMEBOL.
Now, I have to say that I think what they've done together, the president of CONCACAF, Jeffrey Webb, and the president of CONMEBOL, is how to incorporate the North America, the North American side and the Central American Caribbean nations through those little tournaments before you get into the Gold Cup in 2015, and then the top two out of those four will go to the world to the Copa America through a playoff. I mean, I think it's a great thing, and I'm glad to see CONMEBOL asking CONCACAF to join them in this celebration.
Well, they've been doing it for a while now. I mean, it's something that's been talked about. I mean, ever since 1991, we started to see when Mexico first joined in, and Mexico in the 93 final got to the final against Argentina. We've seen that I mean, obviously, CONMEBOL have also wanted teams from CONCACAF to come in and participate in the Copa Libertadores as well. Mexico jumped in. Of course, the jury's still out as far as MLS wanting to do it, for obvious reasons, for logistics and what have you, but yeah, it's a really positive step in the right direction. It's really exciting. The press conference I was at last week, I mean, everybody was really sky high over the possibility of seeing this tournament come to fruition, and I mean, it's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, it really is. Now, how many? I mean, obviously, there's going to be the Copa America next year, which will be in Chile, I understand. So that will be the regular Copa America, and that winner will go to the Confederations Cup, I understand, for Russia 2018. But are we going to expect to see some of the big names being allowed to leave their clubs or at least get the opportunity to play in this tournament? I mean, obviously, I would assume Neymar will be with Brazil next year, Messi will be with Argentina next year. Will those two and some of the bigger stars that do play in Spain and other parts of Europe, as well as in those South American leagues, join in?
You're talking about 2015 or 16? Which one specifically?
Well, I'm talking about 2016 because I'm assuming they will play 2015.
Oh yeah, they're playing 2015. It's scheduled for Chile. It's, I mean, you know, as far as TV rights and everything here and there, it's already, you know, a set deal as far as who's going to be showing Copa America here in the United States. As far as 2016, Eugenio Figueredo, the president of CONMEBOL, talked about that and said that it's something that's being worked on and trying to make it an official tournament in order to have the Messis and have the Neymars and have the Clint Dempseys and the Aaron Johansons of the world, and also the Chicharitos of the world, to try and come to this tournament. I mean, that's the major attractive. You know, if you bring the names, the fans will eventually come. Still have to see how that's going to turn out. But I think the way things are going and this being propelled, especially by Julio Grondona, it has to go through. I mean, it has to go through and make it an official tournament in order for it to be an attractor.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, we don't know what's going to happen in the House of Football over in Switzerland when FIFA is going to get a hold of it, even though they have already reported that this is going to happen. Absolutely correct. It's got to be thrown in there. And, you know, in June, there's going to be at least two dates for semifinal round of qualifying for Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously,
mm-hmm.
you can move those dates around and make it a little earlier. But still, I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's going to be a big question because usually those official dates on the international calendar are set in stone.
Yeah, I think they already made the dates. I don't have them off the top of my head, but it wouldn't interfere with anything, really. I mean, some people were talking about, well, you're going to have Euro 2016 going on. You're going to have also the Olympics, but the Olympics are later on. I think they're in August and September in Rio. But that's going to be interesting to see how the tournament itself plays out because in South America, believe it or not, they really want to play the teams from CONCACAF. It's because of the competitive edge, trying to show that they are the better footballing conference or what have you. Also trying to come to the market here in the United States, for obvious reasons, knowing that there is a huge market for football here in this country. So, right off the bat right there, that it's, as far as marketing, the U.S. is the place to come if you're a national team.
No, yeah, absolutely. And it's we're an upcoming power here for the U.S. national team.
Yeah.
We'll see what they do this summer in the World Cup. But, of course, I think the big question is, which stadiums do you think that's going to host it? Obviously, you would say in your backyard, Sun Life Stadium, where the Dolphins play, is probably a very good place to host some of these Copa America games. Where else do you think you might see a Copa America a game here and there in the country? Some of the bigger markets, or maybe you get a chance for some of these other smaller markets?
Well, just throw a rock from your studio, and you're going to be able to find one stadium right there in my life. That's going to be
one. That's right.
Probably Washington, probably Dallas, definitely L.A., probably Seattle as well. One of those, those are the markets. I mean, in the next couple of weeks, they should be announcing. They presented the logo today in New York City of the tournament. So in the next few days, they should be announcing the actual venues and the organizing committees that will start in that undertaking as far as each particular city is concerned. It's great to see. I mean, it's exciting, and I hope that it all really comes out and becomes a real good success. I mean, South American football really here in the United States, if you're outside of the Latino market, it's really not that touched upon. It's actually really shrugged down, really looked down upon by many in the English-speaking media in certain occasions. I think that would be a very top showcase event where you could start seeing a different light, a different face of this whole region of the world. Some might have a misunderstanding about the football in general.
No, I've watched many, many River Plate matches, Boca Juniors matches, Gold TV. I've seen many, many South American leagues, the Brazilian league, Argentinian league, even the Uruguayan league. I think the football is fantastic. I don't understand why it gets a bad rap. I don't know about everything that goes on over there, maybe the finances of some sort, but I think there's some great, great football being played in South America, and I don't understand why the English-speaking media continues to be negative about it.
Well, look, let's be honest. There's a lot of things that in South America people within football do that leave you kind of like shrugging your shoulders a little bit. You're like, okay, why? There's sometimes no logic or no rhyme or reason to the things that they do. I mean, for example, Argentina last week announced a 30-team league, something that Don Garber should jump on right now. Say, hey, you know what? We're not the only league thinking about. We're not the only league thinking about expansion. God, look at Argentina. They're going to start with 30 teams. Why can't we? And same thing with the MLS calendar. Hey, Brazil has pretty much the same calendar as MLS. Argentina is going to start having the same calendar as MLS. So what's the big deal, I always mention it on Twitter or when I'm speaking to friends. Hey, MLS should try and look at what South America is doing and say, hey, they're doing it. Why can't we?
Exactly. Absolutely. But, I guess you're always going to get difference of opinions, I'm going to get something from you, and then I'll go to someone else, and they'll give me something different. But I really don't understand what the negativity is all about, because I agree with you. I think we're going to see the best of the best coming from South America, taking on the U.S., Mexico, and, of course, some of the other countries that are always going to be fighting and scrapping and scratching and clawing in the Gold Cup and in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying.
Yeah. And not only that, just the tournaments leading up to that tournament. I mean, like, just to add on to what you're saying, I mean, knowing that, you know, there's something on the line for Honduras or Costa Rica or another team that's in the Gold Cup, and knowing that if they get to the semifinals, they got a good shot of getting into that playoff that's going to be played. I mean, I think that's motivation. That's an extra incentive. Okay, we might not beat Mexico or the U.S. in a final or semifinal of the Gold Cup. We got a chance to go and play a Copa America. We're going to be, you know, getting even more attention, more money when you start playing the Brazils, the Argentinas, the Uruguays of the world. So, I mean, it's all relative, and you have to start seeing that the options for exposure as well as for marketability and also revenue goes into play there. I mean, I don't have the exact numbers, but, I mean, knowing that when there's more being played for and more matches being played, there's also going to be an additional revenue at stake.
Now, here's my question to you about the draw and when we get to the draw, because obviously the United States will be the host nation of this tournament in 2016. Mm-hmm. What will happen? Is it going to go by CONMEBOL rankings? Will the U.S. be in the first pot and the top three will go into the first pot with them? Or is it going to be pots A and B will be all South America, and then pot C will be the last two ranked teams in South America with Mexico, USA, and then pot D is like all CONCACAF?
I think your idea is pretty good. the answer we're going to give you is that they haven't come to that yet.
Right.
But your idea doesn't sound like a bad one. I like it, as a matter of fact. So, I mean, why not try and implement it? You can try and get maybe one or two. You're going to have two CONMEBOL teams, maybe even three, because you have 10 of them. And also you have to see how many groups are going to be split into, you know, the teams are going to be split into. So as far as the format, I don't know yet. I mean, nobody knows yet. It's still being worked out. The kinks are being worked out. And maybe by the end of this year, we'll get a better picture going into the end of the year. And maybe going into 2015, we'll have a better idea how that tournament's going to work out.
Well, if you talk to the South American president of CONMEBOL and you give him my idea, I want $10,000. No.
Actually, maybe he'll give you 20. Maybe he'll give you a job, man. I mean, Montevideo is not a bad place to be in November, December. You know, it's nice and it's summer and you know, you can go and hang out on the beach. It's not a bad place to be.
Exactly.
Although it's a little bit too humid for my taste.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, you would know more. You know more about South America up and down. I'm just a tourist.
Oh, that's okay. Well, we all have to be tourists at one point, you know. Yeah, you know, it's all
that's
good.
True. Yeah. Why not? finally, you know, once again, what will American fans, American soccer fans, be so excited to see this tournament in their backyards? What can you tell them that you've probably? You probably said it over a million times, but what can you tell them what they're going to expect in this big tournament now? It could be possibly four groups of four.
I'm going to actually be a thief and steal a line that actually I spoke to Phil Shane the other day, and he had a great line about it. We were there chatting with some people from MLS as well as from one of the different marketing groups here in the United States, and he came up with a great line. He came up with a tremendous line, saying that Copa America itself is probably the purest when it comes to emotion, when it comes to the passion, when it comes to all those things. I mean, you won't see the faces painted in the stands like you do at the World Cup or the Euros, and I think the emotion's a little bit raw. It's a little bit, it's no frills. It's just probably the purest from that standpoint, and you really see these guys, some of these national teams don't, quote unquote, like each other, and I'm talking from a regional rivalry, not from a personal, you know, since they are colleagues and things of that nature. It's just a very intense. It's a region where you have a lot of history between the teams. I mean, the Brazils and Uruguay, the Brazils and Argentina, the Argentina and Uruguay, Chile, Peru, Colombia, Venezuela. I mean, each region has its own rivalry. And, of course, you know, the smaller teams trying to beat the big teams. And it's a very pure, it's a very emotional type of tournament where you can see anything happen. I mean, anything can really happen in those types of tournaments. To get a taste of it, people, I really recommend to check out the Copa America in 2015 because you'll see what comes up, especially when you add the CONCACAF flavor to it as well. That's going to be something that the fans really will truly appreciate. And, of course, you know, if a CONCACAF team ends up beating a CONMEBOL team, yeah, that'll add a little bit of salt to the wound and maybe add a little spice to it in the process.
Absolutely. Juan, thank you for the time, and I'll talk to you next time, my friend.
No problem, man.
All right. And that's Juan Arango, South American journalist extraordinaire, and you can catch him at times on Gold TV and or beIN Sports whenever he is available. And joining me right now, a gentleman who called in a little too early, but that's okay. He's back and ready to talk about probably one of the greatest things that's ever happened in Sacramento sports history outside of the Sacramento Kings of the NBA. The Sacramento Republic FC, this is their inaugural season. And joining me right now, Frankie Devay. Frankie, this must have been a great feeling for you to see a sold-out stadium, to see in that horseshoe stadium over in the capital of California, everyone ready for professional soccer in the Sacramento area.
Oh, thanks for having me, Daniel. It was really incredible to see everyone come out. It's a nice validation of what us soccer stalwarts around town have been saying for years, that this region loves soccer, embraces it, and they've supported it on every level possible. But to see so many people come out and support the team on its first appearance in the area on any sort of professional level was really wonderful. The sellout had over 20,000 people, and the second game that they've had since had 17,000. And so they were able to sustain a really nice group to come out. The local fans have been on Twitter, on Facebook. I've had some old friends from high school contacting me wanting to know about tickets, and it's really been a whirlwind around town, definitely.
Oh, it definitely has been. And even though I believe it was a an opening season loss, unfortunately, at home, but still, you have to say that the support has been absolutely fantastic, and I'm so happy to see everyone in Sacramento come over, filling up the seats from the first row on the ground all the way up to the top. Was former Phoenix Sun and, of course, your current mayor, Kevin Johnson, was he there for the inaugural game at the stadium?
Kevin Johnson, I don't believe he was there, but we did have a few other local luminaries that attended the game, which was nice to see. They had a flyover of the game, and a squadron came by. It really felt like Major League Soccer, if I may use that term. One thing that the town has been really excited about is the national coverage, that the attendance that the match got, that the success around that the team has been enjoying has really resonated nationally and even overseas, with some writers picking up and also talking about it. It's been really wonderful.
Now, I just want to make sure of this correctly. You have two locations or three locations for your season to start, because apparently you have Hughes Stadium, Bonnie Field, and you also have the Anteater Stadium at UCI. You have three separate home stadiums for the time being, or it's just for this year?
Well, okay, let's clarify that. Initially, the deal has been, yes, at Hughes Stadium at the Horseshoe, the first three home matches have been held there. The obviously, the size of the venue has been its most attractive feature. The downside is it's on an artificial turf and has permanent football line, American football line. So it lends a slight high school vibe to the proceedings. Now, the Bonnie Field, which you mentioned, is much smaller venue, but this one is being built as soccer-specific. It's going to feature a full grass field, but instead of 20,000 seats, it's only going to have 8,000. So there's rumors already around town that they're looking into expanding the field, the brand-new field. I don't know if they were anticipating having a sellout and maybe just announced it as a goal, but now that it's occurred, I think the possibilities are really starting to shine in the team executive's eyes.
And let me just say my error, because that apparently this Anteater Stadium is the home field for Orange County Blues FC. So that's my error right there. But let me just say this. I really do hope for Sacramento Republic that Bonnie Field will get more seats. I wouldn't mind seeing them expanding. I mean, if they filled up the horseshoe, at Hughes Stadium, then for goodness sakes, make it bigger. Why not?
Well, interesting enough, according to the team's own released figures, they have close to 6,000 season tickets already sold for Bonnie Field.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine the feeding frenzy that's going to happen when the remaining 12,000 potential fans that have attended already are going to be fighting over those 2,000 tickets. So if anything, the buzz will continue through town. It's going to be the hottest ticket around. So there actually, to go back to your third venue, tomorrow night, the team will be playing its Open Cup match at a third field, which you are right about that. It's actually at Consumnes River College. That's where the team holds their practices. It's also they play on the grass field there, 3,000 seat stadium, and that's where the match versus Ventura Fusion will be held tomorrow. So you were right, just a little bit off on the exact name. Don't worry.
Well, look, I admit when I'm wrong. I'll admit when I'm wrong and stuff. But you know, I'm glad to find out there is a third venue for Sacramento Republic. But let me just say this: right away, you're going to face probably one of the toughest PDL sides on the West Coast in the Ventura County Fusion, because obviously Sacramento Republic is the new rookie in this. Would you feel it would be more of an upset for Sacramento to defeat Ventura County in this one-and-done matchup?
It's interesting that you say that. In the preseason, Sacramento Republic actually scrimmaged the Fusion and were victorious. They won 3-2. Since then, the team has had a few injuries here and there, but I think it would be – I don't know if it would be an upset. I think, if anything, it would be really good for the team's confidence. They stand right now at 3-3-1 for their season record. And on the following week, we face the LA Galaxy 2. That's one of the current juggernauts in USL Pro right now. So I'm hoping they won't overlook Fusion going forward, looking, you know, in anticipation of the Galaxy match. But I think with the rules in place on the Open Cup, the squad here, the Republic, have a really great chance.
Now, obviously, you're looking to see about the rules about players that have been on loan to Sacramento from your affiliation. I'm not sure who you're affiliated with from Major League Soccer with, but you were trying to find out to see if those players that were brought over from their MLS clubs to Sacramento would be allowed to be in the Open Cup. And did you have an answer? Did you find out what is it? Was it a yes or is it a no?
I did find an answer, actually. Right. So under the U.S. Open Cup rules, there's actually two rules that apply to on-loan players. The Sacramento Republic is affiliated with two MLS teams, which is different than any other team in USL Pro. Other teams only have one affiliation. We're affiliated with the San Jose Earthquakes and the Portland Timbers. So it's going to be difficult because according to the rules, they're not allowed to play. Precedent set when a player receives a cap for their team that they're not eligible for any other team in that competition. And then they allow the parents' club. Correct. And so I'm still searching for when that rule went into effect. I heard 2005. I heard 2006. I know that last year there was some issue with an MLS squad in the Pro Cup having on loan players, and it's been really a tricky issue. So for tomorrow, the Republic will be without four players they've received on loan. I'm looking now. I have the official explanation. The first rule states that any player on loan cannot be eligible if they've been with the team for less than 90 days. And then the second rule, which I mentioned, is referred to as a cup tie. So once he's on, once they've received the cap, they're no longer eligible. And as a lower division squad, I believe that the Republic is, you know, by courtesy and a little bit of tradition, giving back to the teams to say, okay, you can use your on loan players. Clearly, we'll step back from that.
Okay. Well, listen, you know, tomorrow night, it's coming very soon, that big Open Cup match against Ventura County. How are you feeling right the way that the club or the players have responded to Preki as your head coach, your manager out on the field? Do you think they've been doing well? Maybe some of the results haven't gone your way due to bad luck. How are you feeling with Preki being manager right now of Sacramento Republic?
Overall, I think he's done a wonderful job. His experience in higher division soccer have lent a confidence to the squad that regardless of the situation, they've really played as best as they could to the system Preki has put in place. They've really attempted to play a possession style, move the ball up along the wings, you know, something that it's a bit more technical. I think Preki wants to institute it in his players a mindset of we can beat anybody, and so we're going to attack this with a high-level mindset, high-level tactics, and let the chips fall where they may. I believe in the opening home opener with 20,000 strong, jitters were apparent. Preki stated afterwards he was a bit unhappy with the sloppiness from the team, and he holds his players to a high standard. He's been really strong in demanding calmness on the ball. He wants his players to be intelligent. Unfortunately, the few times the team has lost, in two of the losses they've received a red card. And so a little bit of mental mistake here and there has definitely held the team back. But in regards to Preki's management, I think he's been a real stabilizing influence. And even around town, the city has responded to him in a real positive manner.
That's fantastic to hear. And you know what, Frankie, very happy once again to see the capital of California in Sacramento getting their professional club. It doesn't matter what level it is, MLS, NASL, USL Pro League, it doesn't matter. As long as there is soccer, professional soccer in Sacramento, that's all that matters. I'm very happy for everyone over there. I love the shield. I love the Sacramento Republic shield, FC with the little bear below the ribbon with the big dark red star in between. You know, it's just absolutely brilliant. And all I can say is good luck tomorrow night against Ventura County. I really hope everything will be successful from here on out. And thank you very much for joining me tonight. Good luck, everyone, Sacramento, if you're listening to the show. Congratulations. Good luck with the club. And I hope to have you back on again soon, Frankie.
Thank you very much, Daniel. I appreciate it. And I hope to talk to you soon.
And more chicken soup.
That's it. Always chicken soup.
You always got to make sure that fever gets killed with chicken soup. Thanks a lot, Frankie. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Have a good night.
All right. Have a good night. It's Frankie DeVay, who is on Soccer Newsday talking about the Sacramento Republic and everything that goes on with Sacramento Republic in the USL Pro League. Frankie DeVay joining me today. And now we go to the NESL segment as we discuss what happened in this spring season, as my goodness, The action is just getting hotter, better, and it's just been unbelievable through five matches already played here in the spring season of the 2014 NASL spring season. It's going to be exciting. It's already exciting. It's already fun to see. And here we go with the past matches from this past weekend and last night. Ottawa hosting the Tampa Bay Rowdies up in Ottawa, and it was a 1-0 lead for Tampa Bay in the 27th minute. Georgi Hristov gave the Rowdies a lead, but Anthony Donatelli equalized 10 minutes later, and that would be the end of that. Final score, Ottawa Fury 1, Tampa Bay Rowdies 1. It was a 4-0 victory by the Fort Lauderdale Strikers at Lockhart Stadium. If you had or listened to the call from Kartik Krishnire, boy, what a call he had on that second goal. He also put it on his Facebook page. But let's get underway with the goals. It was a 4-0 victory against the Atlanta Silverbacks. Martin Nunez puts Fort Lauderdale on the board in the 23rd minute, and that would be up till halftime, 1-0 Fort Lauderdale. Mark Anderson from distance with a hell of a shot, a hell of a shot in the 50th minute. That sucker got nailed really big in the upper 90 far corner. Mark Anderson beats the keeper. It was 2-0 Fort Lauderdale there. Carlos Salazar made it 3-0 in the 84th minute, and then 6 minutes later, or into second half stoppage time, Fafa Picault made it 4-0 as the Silverbacks get tagged with a very bad loss. Final score, Fort Lauderdale Strikers 4, the Atlanta Silverbacks 0. The Indy 11 at home against FC Edmonton, and once again, got some goals in the first half. Everyone knows in Indy, it's going to be a rookie season. It's an inaugural season. They're an expansion side. Of course, that doesn't take them away, or doesn't take that away, because why? You see how Indy 11 has already excited the fans and the crowds over at the stadium at IUPUI. Indianapolis falls to FC Edmonton by a final of 2-1. And in the 24th minute, it was Darryl Fordyce that gave Edmonton a lead. And then Kareem Moses, the defender, 2 minutes later, made it 2-0 Edmonton. Mike Ambersley has pulled one back 3 minutes later after Moses scored to make it 2-1 Edmonton. But that would be the end of that. Edmonton takes a victory over Indy 11. Final score, Indy 11 1, FC Edmonton 2. San Antonio hosting the Carolina Railhawks over at Toyota Field. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, I gotta tell you, unbelievable stuff here from San Antonio. Nothing happening in the first half, but it all got started in the 53rd minute. Eric Hasley made it 1-0 for San Antonio. And then 6 minutes later, Danny Barrera made it 2-0 San Antonio. And then Tomas Zahorski in the 77th minute made it 3-0 for the Scorpions. They defeat the Carolina Railhawks by a final of 3-0. Once again, final score, San Antonio Scorpions 3, the Carolina Railhawks 0. And finally, it was moved to a Monday night over at Short Stadium on the campus of Hofstra University out in Long Island, in Hempstead, Long Island. The New York Cosmos, on a two-match losing streak, breaks it and breaks the scoring drought. Marco Senna on a hell of a goal in the 61st minute beats the keeper. Minnesota United FC no longer unbeaten. They get their first loss of the season as they fall to the New York Cosmos over at Schuert Stadium. Final score, the New York Cosmos 1, Minnesota United FC 0. And as we take a look at the standings here in the North American Soccer League, the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, top of the table, tying record with Minnesota United, 4 wins, no losses, and a draw. but goal difference is the first tiebreaker. So Fort Lauderdale is in first place with 12 points, just like Minnesota, but Fort Lauderdale is on a plus six, two more than Minnesota, who has a plus four. In third place, the New York Cosmos with three wins, no losses, two draws. They have 9 points, and they have a plus four on the differential. In fourth place, San Antonio Scorpions with three wins, no draws, two losses, and they have a plus two on the differential. Of course, they also have 9 points. In fifth place, the Carolina Railhawks, two wins, a draw, and two losses. They are on a 7 points in fifth place with a minus three differential. Tampa Bay Rowdies in sixth place with a win, three draws, and a loss. 6 points on a minus one differential. Atlanta, two wins, three losses. Minus six on the differential. They're in seventh, also 6 points. Ottawa Fury, one win, one draw, three losses. They're even on the differential with 4 points. FC Edmonton getting their first win of the season, in the spring season, that is, with a win, a draw, three losses, also with 4 points, but they're in ninth with a minus three. And the Indy 11 in last place, 5 matches played already, no wins, 2 draws, 3 losses for 2 points. They've scored 7 goals. They've allowed 10. They're on a minus three differential. But once again, this is just the spring season because we have 4 more matches remaining, plus what FC Edmonton is going to do against Montreal to see if they can advance into that Canadian Championship final. And also, let's not forget that 8 of these 10 sides in the NESL will be playing in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Round 3 matches will be on Wednesday, May the 28th. So wait to see what's going to happen after tonight's match. And want to remind everyone, don't forget tonight, Portland Timbers under 23 side will be traveling to face at the Arizona United. Go ahead to the cup.us with Josh Hockler's site. There should be a list of matches that will be streamed tonight and tomorrow night. It should be exciting. It should be fun for everyone to see. Don't forget, once again, the NESL will be joining the U.S. Open Cup in round 3. Meaning MLS teams now going to round 4, meaning round 5 has been created as the round of 16. So a lot of excitement, a lot of fun. I cannot wait to see what's going to happen as these things are going to move forward. Let's head on over to the schedule for round 6. Round 6 of the spring season of the North American Soccer League. As we count it all down here on Saturday, May 17th. And here we go. The Carolina Railhawks will be hosting the Atlanta Silverbacks at Wake Med Soccer Park at the 7:30 p.m. Eastern Start Time. The Indy 11 hosting the Ottawa Fury at Michael A. Carroll Stadium. That's also 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Tampa Bay Rowdies hosting the New York Cosmos at Al Lang Stadium. That will be also a 7:30 p.m. Eastern starting time. And then in the Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, Minnesota United FC hosting the Fort Lauderdale Strikers at the National Sports Center Stadium. And as at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central, San Antonio Scorpions hosting the FC Edmonton over at Toyota Field. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, go over to the Watch ESPN app. Take a look and see what games will be played on Saturday, May 17th, the Watch ESPN match of the week being streamed. And it looks like it's going to be the Carolina Railhawks-Atlanta Silverbacks match over at Wake Med Soccer Park. It's only a guess, not completely sure, but head on over to the Watch ESPN app and see what's going to happen and who will be streamed, the free stream, actually, if you're going to watch it on the ESPN app or the Watch ESPN app for the North American Soccer League match of the week that's going to be streamed on ESPN. And as we continue on here on the NASL segment, as we continue to roll here, we'll be talking about the New York Red Bulls very soon in the Red Bull Hour, which, oh boy, A lot of interesting things happened in that match, and you know what? It's going to be very, very interesting on how to diffuse and decipher what happened at Red Bull Arena this past Saturday. And you're going to hear a very animated and an interesting Mike Petke. That's coming up in a couple of minutes here for you Red Bull fans, you Red Bull supporters, because Mike Petke pulls no punches. Boy, was Mike Petke not happy at all, because there's a lot of questions to be asked about that match. But once again, as we head back over NESL.com, you want all of your NESL news, you go to NESL.com. It's going to be interesting here as right now FC Edmonton holds a 2-1 aggregate lead in the Canadian Championship Series in the semifinals with Montreal. And if FC Edmonton does defeat Montreal, it could be interesting to see where FC Edmonton is going to be playing their games in the CONCACAF Champions League in 2014. But then again, they have to await the winner of the Vancouver-Toronto second leg matchup. That's going to be coming very, very soon. That's all tomorrow as well, coming up here for these Canadian teams. I got to tell you, all of these tournaments coming up to qualify for, especially for this edition of the CONCACAF Champions League, it's going to be a lot of fun. Will FC Edmonton pull an upset here? Will FC Edmonton do the damage, do the deed? Because at the moment, FC Edmonton and Toronto have a 2-1 advantage on the aggregate against their opponents. Vancouver behind, Montreal Impact behind. It should be very interesting to see. It should be very interesting to watch, because we don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun. I cannot wait to see who the Canadian representative will be. Will we have a Toronto-Edmonton matchup in the final? That is what we are going to witness and watch if it does happen. Or for those of you following certain Canadian journalists out there, like Dwayne Rollins, as we said before, Dwayne Rollins, Daniel Squizzato, and many, 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 many others, including Steven Sandor, who covers the FC Edmonton club on the 11CA site. You can follow Steven Sandor as well on Twitter at the 11CA. So we'll see what happens. It's a lot of interesting things going on here, American-wise, Canadian-wise, all going on here on the 40 Scenes 5 American Soccer Show. And I just want to once again let everyone know, tonight, one match, Arizona United taking on the Portland Timbers under-23s in the second round of the U.S. Open Cup tomorrow night. And that'll be right after the show here. So if you guys want to go ahead and go to the Portland Timbers website, or maybe you go to go to YouTube or to Arizona United's website and check out the YouTube stream, go right ahead or go to YouTube.com, probably type it up and it'll probably be there. And you can watch it. And don't forget, this Friday, Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup Round 2 Proper Review Show. Join me here once again at blogtalkradio.com/4YearsTeamsFire. And you can go ahead and listen to the commentary, and as I try to bring over the winners, the top six matches of round two, to contact the people, coaches or journalists or supporters that wants to describe and discuss how those matches happened. Of course, thank you for listening to round one review last Friday. This Friday will be round two review. And once again, everyone, the World Cup is coming very soon. The World Cup is coming in a short amount of time. June 11th, Thursday, the World Cup will be underway. And we're going to have journalists and people calling in representing different national teams or representing different countries coming on this show. My good friend Carter Krishnar will be my special co-host from World Soccer Talk. He'll, of course, the Fort Lauderdale Strikers play-by-play announcer. It's going to be exciting, fun. I can't wait. It's great. It's going to be awesome. You will enjoy it. I know you'll enjoy it. Please come on over here, blogtalkradio.com/FourYearsTeamsFire, and make it a part of your World Cup as we discuss every single day. There's a World Cup match discussed every single day, involving as well U.S. Open Cup review shows. Stand by for those things. It's going to be a lot of fun. And now it's time to talk about what the New York Red Bulls did as they lose to the Chicago Fire on a wild 9-goal night. They lose by a score of 5-4. Two hat tricks in this match, Harrison Shipp and Bradley Wright Phillips. My God, Bradley Wright Phillips with another hat trick. 8 goals in 4, 9 altogether. 2 of those 4 matches, he scored a hat trick, 4 in the run of play, 2 from the penalty spot. Bradley Wright Phillips is definitely doing a job for the New York Red Bulls. But you have to say the second half was the worst start of any second half I've ever seen from this club. Now, obviously, the goal that was scored 4 minutes into second half by Quincy Amerikwa, okay, fine. They tied the score. They tied it up. Leave it alone. That's fine. Okay, it was bound to happen. But unfortunately, the rest of it went to hell. The New York Red Bulls came out and either came out flat to start the second half, or they just assumed that they were going to do a cakewalk all over the Chicago Fire, who they were looking for their first goal, their first win of the season. First win of the season after taking a 2-1 lead at half from a great answer by Tim Cahill to equalize, and then Bradley Wright Phillips to make it 2-1 Red Bulls. Quincy Amerikwa, 49th minute. Harrison Shipp with 2 goals to get his hat trick in the 53rd and in the 58th. Patrick Nayarko in the 64th. Harrison Shipp with a hat trick and an assist. Here is the situation I see. That was a terrible, terrible start to the second half. I understand we're in May, but still, that's no excuse. That's 3 points you just wasted. That is 3 points that you were supposed to get, supposed to have. And, you know, you lost it. You just washed it away, flushed down the toilet. It was something that should never have happened in the first place if they were ready to go. The back line became a shambles. Armando lost the ball. Olave loses the ball. Kosuke Kumura lost the ball. Stripped. They were all stripped. They were all falling asleep. What did you expect Robles to do? I mean, he tried to make the saves. And everything fell apart. And all of a sudden, the scoreline became Chicago 5, Red Bulls 2. And that's the same scoreline last year in the final game of the regular season that the Red Bulls clinched their first ever Supporters Shield title, the first ever hardware that the Red Bulls ever got, including those days as the Metro Stars. They lost the lead so quickly. And yes, Harrison Shipp is a hot rookie right now in Major League Soccer. He's a hot rookie right now in Major League Soccer, and you just have to, you know, give him credit. Give him credit for playing a hard-nosed game. never giving up on trying to find a way to steal the ball, trying to find a way to score, and putting it away and making sure his side does the deed. Now, let me say this. Great job by the Red Bulls to come back and make it a game, because it could have been dead and buried. It really could have been dead and buried. But they came back. Bradley Wright Phillips does it again. It was a ball that was crossed into Lloyd Sam. Sam tried to trap it down, but it bounced off of him, went back to Bradley Wright Phillips as he dummied the ball to Sam. Sam gave it back to him by accident, I think, but still, what a touch. What a rip. Hell of a shot. Bradley Wright Phillips is just, what a hell of a shot that was, Bradley Wright Phillips, to make it 5-3. And then Thierry Henry gets taken down from behind in the area. And Thierry Henry, of course, a lot of debating going on by referee Kevin Stott, as he took his time with that decision. He didn't know whether to give the penalty or not, and he finally did. Bradley Wright Phillips takes the spot kick again, and he gets his second hat trick in MLS. His second hat trick in Major League Soccer. Bradley Wright Phillips is on a roll, and he is on fire. Now, I don't know what happened in England and why he left his club. Maybe the club didn't fit him back in England, but I'll say this. He's fitting in very, very well, having one of the greatest strikers in the world and Thierry Henry on the field. They try to make a comeback. They try to equalize late. Before Thierry Henry, Bradley Wright Phillips tried to go for goal number 4 on the match, and Sean Johnson makes a big save on that breakaway, and then Thierry Henry tries to ride his bike, tries to go in there for the big equalizer, and once again, Sean Johnson makes a big save. You know, Sean Johnson has been a Red Bull killer in goal. He's been unbelievable ever since he got that opportunity to start in a game, and he left with a draw a couple of years back, I think in 2010, late 2010 season. Sean Johnson has been an excellent keeper in MLS. So I just have to say that, you know, he's always going to be there. And isn't it strange right now for Sean Johnson, because even though the team nearly lost 2 points, you have to say Sean Johnson has given up 9 goals in 2 games at Red Bull Arena. That has never happened with Sean Johnson, either at Giant Stadium or at Red Bull Arena, because Sean Johnson usually does these things the wrong, or shall I say the right way, because he never gives up so many goals like that. But once again, give credit to Frank Yallop and the coaching staff. Give credit to the Chicago Fire for what they were trying to accomplish to get the first win of the season. For Frank Yallop, his first win as a Chicago Fire head coach, congratulations. Comes at the expense of a poor second half to start for the Red Bulls. They fought back, but the point was that they should never have been in that position in the first place. Now let's go to the officiating. And his first assistant, which is the bench side. For those of you that are always asking that question, who is always the first assistant, who's the second assistant, how does that work? The first assistant is always the person by the bench with the fourth official. The second assistant is on the far side. So now I know how that works. I'm glad I can tell all of you that, for those of you that did not know, now you know how that works. So that's the situation. But Kevin Stott, with his first assistant, Brian Poschel, in my view, was dreadful. And it was an absolute mess up on his side of the field on the first goal by the Chicago Fire. Now, FIFA is also going to get involved in this finger-pointing as well, as is MLS and U.S. Soccer, because apparently there's been some form of amendment to the one of the laws of offside. Because Harrison Shipp was trying to pass the ball to Mike McGee. It ended up being more of a shot than a pass. But as you saw what I saw, Mike McGee, before the ball was played, Mike McGee was in an offside position. The ball, the shot or the pass was after Mike McGee broke ahead. Mike McGee went wide right and then went towards the ball. The nearside assistant, Mr. Brian Poschel, raised his flag for offside. Kevin Stott, however, did not blow his whistle. And the truth is, Mike McGee did not touch the ball. But Robles, Luis Robles, who got, I would say, you know, destroyed by his own back line tonight, and then destroyed by the referee, by the officiating crew as well, because that was a horrendous call. That is a horrendous call. And the truth of the matter is this. McGee was in an offside position, and whenever someone's in an offside position, the flag quickly goes up, the referee automatically blows the whistle. And once again, each referee will determine what the laws of the game should be dictated or how it should be defined. I understand that. But when have you ever seen that ever happen? Mike McGee went towards the ball. Does he actually have to touch the ball for the whistle to be blown? These new, apparently, these laws of the game for offside, back in the day when they did change it, they said, yes, it has to be. Now, once again, passive offside comes into play. Passive offside. Now, what does that mean? It means that someone's in an offside position and he doesn't play the ball. Yes, he's offside, but he doesn't play the ball. But you see, that's where that whole sequence really questions the situation. Because Mike McGee did go after the ball. So basically, passive offside is done and gone. Did he touch the ball? No. But he went after the ball. That's not passive offside. That is being in an offside position, going towards the ball, and even though he peeled to the left away from the ball, that still should have been offside. The flag was raised. The whistle should have blown, and that goal should never have counted in the first place. That goal should never have counted at all. And once again, Kevin Stott. Kevin Stott did not blow his whistle. Mike McGee was offside. He was not passive when he went offside. He went offside. He went towards the ball. And just because it bounced the wrong way, that doesn't mean that McGee, who peeled off late, saying he's still passive, not passive at all. That is not passive offside if Mike McGee is going after the ball. The goal should have been wiped out. And here's another thing as well. And I've seen this done in the Barclays Premier League. The goalkeeper, apparently, was interfered with because of his line of sight. So, if Mike McGee is still considered to be in a passive offside position, and he kind of peeled away to the left, but Robles is trying to stop the ball, Mike McGee distracted Robles, that's been whistled down for interference because you blocked the line of sight of the ball for the keeper in the Barclays Premier League. Shouldn't Kevin Stott have whistled that down and say, no goal, Mike McGee, you blocked Luis Robles' line of sight? Because if that is the case, if that truly is the case, then sadly, that ball should have been whistled down. That goal should have been wiped out. That was an absolute disgrace of officiating by Kevin Stott, as well as the assistant referee in this match, by Mr. Brian Poschel. That was absolutely disgraceful. And I don't blame Mike Petke for being upset on how that was called. Now, of course, I'm going to play it for you. I'm going to play the audio for you from what he said. But I want to finish it off with this. And this is where I'm blaming FIFA, and this is where I'm blaming MLS, and this is where I'm blaming US Soccer, because if there are changes or amendments to the laws of the game when it comes to offside, shouldn't the media be informed about this? Shouldn't we be informed about these changes? This was picked up on Twitter, that laws of the game has been changed or amended on an offside rule, of one of the many offside rules. And if that is the case, why haven't we been informed? Because I did not know this until today, or until yesterday, because of Simon Borg saying that that's a good goal and that should have stood. Well, let me say this, because I personally believe that is not a goal. If that counts in the Barclays Premier League as blocking the line of sight for the keeper, and the ball goes in and the referee whistles it down, that should be the case in every league, in every match, whether it's in a league level or a national team level. That should not have happened. And I'll be honest, it probably should have been a 4-4 draw, because it was an entertaining game. Unfortunately, the Red Bulls could not come back to make it 5-5. But that one goal, that one disgusting goal that was allowed for nothing, that, my friends, is a goal that needs to be talked about. We need to be informed of how this happened. How this happened, why it happened, and how can it be prevented from not happening again? Because I'm telling you right now, that was absolutely disgraceful from what I saw. Other than that, the Red Bulls really have nobody to blame but themselves, because they lost the game in the second half, because their bad start in the second half costed them the 3 points. Not that goal that could have been easily not be a talking point, which it became a talking point. That is the truth. We need better understanding and better information about what is considered offside, passive offside. Because here's the thing, and here's why I say this, to be honest. Back in 2006, the New York Red Bulls, of course, that's the season that they changed from the Metro Stars to the New York Red Bulls. They go to Kansas City at Arrowhead Stadium to take on, at the time, the Kansas City Wizards. They played at Arrowhead Stadium, which is still the home stadium of the Kansas City Chiefs of the NFL. And what happened in that game was this. Red Bulls are up 2-1 on Kansas City. Baldomero Toledo was the referee for that match. And then here comes Kansas City trying to find a way to level the score. And by the way, this match happened on August 30th of 2006. The Red Bulls are defending. The far side assistant raised his flag. Baldomero Toledo ignores it, doesn't even look at it, doesn't even acknowledge it, just leaves it alone. Toledo does not see the flag lifted for offsides a good minute and a half. The far side assistant raised his flag. Carlos Mendez is yelling, screaming, offside, offside, telling Baldomero Toledo, hey, this is offside. You got to whistle it. Doesn't even whistle it. The far side assistant lowered his flag. The goal was scored by Kansas City. It was a 2-2 draw that should have been a 2-1 win on the road for the Red Bulls. And all of a sudden, it's a 2-2 draw, and it ended like that. See, here's the problem with American sports. The officials, and it doesn't matter what sport, it doesn't matter which league, the officiating crew, they do not get punished for these horrible calls that they whistle or don't whistle. They might get a video review from the league's officiating head telling them, hey, you missed this. You can't miss this ever again. No such penalties are given when you're talking about bad officiating. Just like in the Barclays Premier League, and I guess everywhere else, on-field officials, they get punished for making bad decisions. Very, very bad decisions. And that is what I'm talking about. That is what I'm talking about when you're talking about these referees. Are they getting better or are they getting worse? Just when you want to praise our American referees, that has to happen. And I'm being honest with you right now. I think the top official on the field, in the middle of the field, is Mark Geiger. He is the only one right now that I consider to be the best American referee from within U.S. soccer or in the pro department. And that's why I think he's going to the World Cup representing the American referees in U.S. soccer, because he has done a fantastic job of how to dictate the laws of the game. I think he is going to be the best referee that U.S. soccer has produced, probably since Brian Hall. That is the truth, and that is what is going on here. Let's go ahead and get to the audio. Head coach Mike Petke, not a happy camper, but let me say this. It's a classic, and you're going to love it.
Hello, head coach Mike Petke. Mike, your thoughts on the game today?
Get some questions.
Michael.
Yeah, Mike, the team has been playing so well on defense in recent matches. What happened tonight?
I don't know. Wasn't good enough. We gave them most goals, self-inflicted, bored upon ourselves. It wasn't good enough. You know, you could talk all we want about the second half and late coming back and almost tying it. Well, when you're down by 3 goals or 2 goals, whatever it was, you know, of course that's what you're going to do. Look to push and get the goals, and we got it. So I commend their effort. They worked hard at the end, but we should never have been in that situation to begin with.
Franco.
I think the turning point, to be honest with you, was when the whistle blew to start the game, to be quite honest with you. I didn't see the urgency. I didn't see... it wasn't good enough. It wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
And let me be clear, when I say it wasn't good enough, it starts with me.
Mike, if I can ask, the assistant had his flag up for Chicago's first call. What did he say to you about that situation?
Do I want to get fined?
No, I'm
posing a question to myself. Do I want to absolutely bury them and get a big fine? Or do I want to smile and say they have a hard job to do? So I guess what I'll say is, when I look at the play and the ball trickles, a slow roller across the box, and it beats Luis to the far post, my six-year-old son upstairs will tell me, Daddy, he didn't react to that because somebody was standing right there. Again, they have hard decisions to make, I guess, but to me, if I was hired as a referee and I refereed tonight's game, to me, I would have called it an offside. He chose not to call it offside, so we live with it. Charles?
Yeah, but on that play, the replay showed that the flag goes up.
Yes.
So what does he explain happens if the flag goes up?
I've asked many questions to fourth officials in my short time as a head coach, and to be quite honest with you, 90% of the answers I get back, I don't understand. This happened to be one of them.
Anything else? Yeah, Dan. Mike, are there any positives to take from tonight's performance?
Yes, I'm going to go and have a vodka.
That works.
That is a big positive. And let me be clear, very clear. It's tough for me to be critical of my team, to be quite honest with you, because every year you got to allow yourself for at least a game like this, maybe two. And I've been there before, and that's what I told them in the locker room. I told them it wasn't good enough, but I've been there before, so it's hard for me to yell at them and hard for me to blow up. I've been on the losing end of a game like this, and I've been exhausted at the end like these guys are because they did everything they can to come back. So I commend that. But we're a better team than that. You can't tell me that 2 weeks ago in D.C., in Houston, home to Houston, our ball movement, everything, the way it was, to go from there to here in 2 weeks. So on the night, we weren't good enough. And I'd like to also, last thing on the result, Chicago, I'm not taking anything away from Chicago. They came out like they needed the win, and they obviously do. This is their first win of the season, and they came out, and they their game plan was high energy and to try to frustrate us, and they did. So my hat's off to them.
In the back.
What did you see out of Harrison Schitt tonight? How did you prepare for him?
How did I prepare for a player who's played only 10 games as a professional? He wasn't a focal point for us. He's good on the ball. He's very good delivery, but he's a young kid who I think has a bright future. But he's 10 games into his pro career. He has a good future, but he wasn't a focal point of our preparation. Perhaps maybe he should have been.
Last one.
Mike, you said the urgency wasn't there, and throughout the season, there's been this again with urgency. You guys have to be doing the games, and you guys don't have that urgency. Why is that? You guys are not
able to. Listen, that's the question that has been asked to every coach since the start of sports, professional sports. I don't have that answer. I don't have the answer that I don't have the formula to inject them with urgency. If I did, I'd be a billionaire and I'd be the best coach. I'd be coaching Barcelona right now, to be honest with you. I don't have that answer, and I'm not accusing them of not wanting or not. Some of these guys might be tired. We'll have to look at that. But, yeah, we certainly didn't show it for 90 minutes.
Thank you very much.
And that's head coach Mike Petke. I don't blame him for how he feels, obviously, because I just don't blame him on how he feels about what happened that night. Of course, he's upset with how his team played, but he's very upset on that call. So that's the situation. It's in front of us. Let's go quickly now to a man that's really red hot. He wasn't happy with the result that his side got, but Bradley Wright Phillips, red hot. 8 goals in 4 matches, 9 all together. Here's Bradley Wright Phillips.
What happened in the second half when you're up 2-1?
Um, don't know, we gave away some soft goals. The whole team, we weren't good enough, you know, we lost a bit of, the word. You know, we lost our enthusiasm, I think, I felt. And we just, yeah, we weren't good enough. They came out more prepared.
How tough is it, given that Dick said, you know, uncharacteristic mistakes at the back, and, you know, allowing them to score two or three goals in the span of 15, 20 minutes there?
Yeah. Well, no, it's frustrating, you know, because we shouldn't be conceding five goals at home, but we did. You know, we have to rectify it the next game.
Obviously, it's not the result you wanted, but your own personal performance, another hat trick,
yeah,
second one of the season. How are you feeling comfortable up top with Henri and especially the midfield that's been giving you so much support to get those goals?
Yeah, I'm thankful for the boys. You know, they want me to get my goals, but today is not really the day I want to talk about goals. I don't think myself, I started off well in the second half. You know, as a team, it don't really matter who's scoring. I just don't think we're good enough second half.
And that was that, Bradley Wright Phillips. You know, he's part of the team, and, you know, he just wants to do what's right for the team, and he just goes out there, and he's just scoring like there's no tomorrow. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, you know, he's just really been excelling. And he's one goal away from 10. And this club, whether it was Clint Mathis, Giovanni Severese, Juan Pablo Angel, no one has scored 20 in a season. Plenty of matches left before the break for the World Cup. Plenty of matches remaining in this season. It's just been absolutely unbelievable what is going on here, and, you know, how this whole setup for Bradley Wright Phillips has come about. Absolutely unbelievable what we're seeing here from Bradley Wright Phillips, and let's hope he'll continue it before and after the break comes. Dax McCarty, not happy about how this team played, but here he is right now.
How quickly do you want a game to get a game like this out of your system?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a great way to perform in the second half, but other than, you know, 15, 20 minutes of pretty poor effort on our part, it wasn't terrible.
Could that first half maybe force you guys to sleep a little bit, given the fact that you came into this game winless and you were up and you dominated the play in the first half?
No, not at all. We knew they were a tough team. They probably should have a couple wins under their belt. That them being winless had nothing to do with our performance in the second half, the beginning of the second half. No, I mean, obviously they get a goal they shouldn't have. It's clear offside, so maybe we lacked a little bit of urgency in the beginning, but should have been 0-0, and then we settle into the game and play some pretty good stuff in the first half. It's not too bad. Obviously, we scored a couple good goals. Probably could have been up a little bit more. I don't think they had a shot in the first half. I can't remember, at least. And then second half, what is there to say? We make our mistakes. And anytime you give a team a couple balls in the box uncontested, their guys are good enough to finish them.
How tough is this loss for you guys? Because obviously you guys have been playing pretty well defensively, and this is not really...
I don't think this is an indication of how good we are defensively. I think we're still a good team. It's not a great result, obviously, but, you know, just because one bad game or one bad 20 minutes where Chicago basically puts everything on frame and they score four goals, I mean, I don't think you're going to see a game like that ever again, to be honest.
Chicago was so desperate to get their first win. How much do you think that played into that?
Yeah, I think they've been desperate to get their first win. We knew that. That didn't change the way we approached the game at all. It was pretty standard for us. We approached it like it was going to be a tough game, like we approach every game. So them being winless had nothing to do with it. I think they were hungry regardless. But like I said before, anytime you give a team two or three balls in the back, and basically invite them to just have free shots at our goal, good players are going to finish them.
Was that a turning point as far as the second half?
Yeah, of course. I don't think I have to tell you guys that.
at least some positives. Bradley Wright Phillips has been on fire. He's got about eight goals in this four-game stretch.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about Bradley's performance so far?
Yeah, I mean, he's scoring goals. He's doing his job. I think, like I said, for 20 minutes, we stopped playing soccer, and they pressed us high from the start of the second half, and we didn't deal with it properly, and we shot ourselves in the foot a little bit. But Brad's been doing his job for the past couple of games, so we're not worried about that. We're not worried about scoring goals. Scoring goals is never really an issue for us, so we just have to get back to what we've been doing defensively and not give silly goals away.
That's Dax McCarty. And Chicago's pressuring. Absolutely. Chicago is pressuring high and hard, and they wanted to win a lot more than the Red Bulls did. Now, what does that do for the Red Bulls right now? Now, if you want to say, you know, they're at 500, 3 wins, 3 losses, 5 draws. So it's not really that bad. But once again, they got a couple more games remaining. They're going to be in Toronto at a 4:30 afternoon start over at BMO Field. Then on this coming Saturday, then the Saturday after, they're home against Portland. Pardon me. Then they have a trip to Kansas City to take on Sporting Kansas City on the road. And then they come back. They are going to play against the New England Revolution at Gillette Stadium. A 5 o'clock start time on a Sunday. That was moved from Saturday to Sunday because of an international game that's going to be played. And then they have a U.S. Open Cup Round 4 match, hopefully be on Wednesday the 11th. And then they're going to take their two-week break before they get back into the U.S. Open Cup for round five, if they advance out of round 4, depending on who they're going to play against. That draw should be made up somewhere down the line. We'll find out when that will happen, when U.S. Soccer gives out the draw. What does this mean now for this coming Saturday? It means that both Tim Cahill and Roy Miller will now be sent to their respective national teams. Roy Miller will be going to Costa Rica, while Tim Cahill will be with Australia for the World Cup down in Brazil. So this was their last match. So here's Tim Cahill about his send-off not being as what he wished it was. And, of course, his son, Kaya, once again sang the national anthem for the United States of America before the game got underway. So here's Tim Cahill on basically his send-off, his son, and the match.
Okay. To be totally honest with you, I'm disappointed now because we controlled the game. I think, you know, when we're up in their faces early on, we pressed high. Second half, we sat off, we changed our tactics, and, you know, they had nothing to lose, so they went for it. We made a few mistakes, and then we had to chase the game. And still, even when we were chasing, I still felt that we could have got the fifth goal. But 9 goals in one game, 5 goals conceded is just not good enough. But, you know, I would have liked to have left on a better send-off, but overall, mixed emotions today.
Tim, when you guys came out in the second half, it's just the whole team seemed so disjointed. What was it, those first 15 minutes of the second half?
I think that we stayed high on the wings and up top as well, and we possibly should have just compacted it a bit more. And they just pressed. They played 3 in the middle against us too. Even in the first half, there was instances where me and Dax got caught out because we tried to press and win the ball back. But when you go down 1-0, we have to try and get the game back as soon as possible. And again, we have to get the game back again in the second half. So overall, yeah, we'll take responsibility ourselves as a team. You know, all of us know that we could have done better. We could have scored goals probably to win 6-5 today. So, but really happy for Brad. Another hat-trick, top of the leaderboard. And, you know, I'm quietly confident that we're going to do well because there's not really many teams that... you know, when we're playing well, we got confidence. You can see in the first half, no one can touch us regardless of going down 1-0. But it's a long season and, you know, I've got no real big worries, even though, you know, a few of us are heading off to the World Cup. But the boys, we did well. We just got ourselves to blame for a few silly mistakes.
You said you had mixed emotions and you seemed to just have a certain energy when you started that game, being that it is your last before the World Cup. What did this game mean to you today?
I needed 90 minutes for myself, really, you know, and I needed to put in a good performance because unlucky with injuries and obviously only played 60 minutes, had to come off with a kick last week. And now to get 90 minutes before going to World Cup is massive for me, massive for my country and obviously my club here. I'm just disappointed that we couldn't get the win, but we needed to play with a bit of a bite tonight, and we started like that. But the thing is, we should have continued it together instead of like having, you know, two or three biting all the time, and just a bit more belief. And you know, we've got it, we'll find it again. And I'm confident in this team because we've got ability to score goals, and we showed it tonight, even though we conceded five.
How tough is the loss, though, given that, you know, you guys gave away uncharacteristic turnovers in the back, and you guys have been playing so well these last four games before before today?
No, you said it. Uncharacteristic goals. You know, that's something that's been out of the game for us for, you know, the last few weeks. But overall, we win together, we lose together. And they're a good group of lads that, even though we lost today, if we'd won, we'd be equal first. But, you know, we'll go on a run. Any game that we play at home, people are going to be scared to come here. Away from home, we'll pick up some points along the way. But like I said all season, we just need to finish in the top five. And then it's game on for New York Red Bulls.
Tim, did you get the angle on the goal that was originally flagged for offside, but then the ref allowed it?
No comment. I don't want to say anything about that because you probably know the same thing as me.
And any more butterflies from your son singing the national anthem?
No, butterflies all the way up till he finished, and that was it. You know, it's too hard for me to concentrate with things like that because I'm so nervous for him, and he's, you know, he means the world to me. And you know, the thing was, it's just nice the way their club they think of me, and obviously the amount of trouble the fans go to really give me an amazing send off today in the club. So. Overall, you know, I'm really happy with this football club. They're good to me, they're good to my family, and I like to do the same in return.
Looked American. Looked American out there.
Huh?
Looked American.
And that's Tim Cahill, everybody. Tim Cahill sending off over to Australia for the World Cup. Boy, oh boy, a lot of interesting stuff going on here. It's unbelievable what has happened this match. But once again, the New York Red Bulls, they have to go out and they have to find a way without Cahill and without Roy Miller on a Saturday. And they'll be without Michael Bradley because he'll be with the U.S. national team. And you just got to say that it's just been unbelievable what has happened on a match like that. It's just been unbelievable how you can lose this type of a game. And you know what? What is it about this team that continues to play these types of games, scoring all these types of strange games when it comes to, it's just been unbelievable. It's just been unbelievable how they get involved in these weird multi-goal games. We're not talking about five goals, like, you know, 3-2 or 4-3 or maybe 2-1. We're talking about 4-4, 5-5, 5-4. You know, just stuff you never thought you'd see, and they always bring out the best out of their opponents. It's just been unbelievable what they have done, and it's just been unbelievable how they get involved in these sort of things. It's just unreal what's going on here. Oh, boy, I'm telling you, it's just unbelievable what has happened. Just unbelievable how they played this game. Bad officiating, they erased it with the 2-1 lead at the half. Then they come out slow to start the second, high pressure all the way. They make a great comeback, but they fall short in basically stealing away 2 points from Chicago. It's just unbelievable how they have basically lost this game. I can't believe it. I cannot believe this has happened. Oh, boy. It's just one of those things. And you know what? Once again, we just have to just find a way to just unbelievable to see. They just have to stop having these moments of slow start. They got to go out there, play hard. We know they can play hard, but they got to find a way to just not have these lulls, either at the start of the match or at the start of the second half. It's just been unbelievable. I'm telling you, it's just one of those unbelievable moments that you're seeing right there in front of you. But once again, this whole thing, it's just one of those things where it's really difficult. It's really tough to see. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, they got to find a way not to have these mental lapses going. But other than that, this is what's in front of them right now. And let's quickly take a look at the schedule to see what's in front of the New York Red Bulls as we count down to the World Cup in Brazil. As we take a look here once again, in the month of May, there are 3 matches remaining. May 17th, this Saturday at Toronto at 4:30 p.m. Then next Saturday on May 24th, 7 o'clock p.m., they'll be home against the Portland Timbers. Those 2 games can be seen on MSG Network. On Tuesday, May 27th, a road trip to Sporting Kansas City on ESPN2. And then afterwards, one of the 3 send-off series games, as they'll be hosting Azerbaijan, the United States national team, after the Sporting Kansas City Red Bull game. We'll see what happens there. And June 8th, Sunday, 5 o'clock Eastern, the New York Red Bulls will be on the road at the New England Revolution, and that will be seen on MSG Network Sunday, June 8th. And then we will await the opponent for the New York Red Bulls on the road in the U.S. Open Cup. So we'll wait and see what happens there. Should be interesting. It should be a lot of fun. It should be exciting. And don't forget, everyone, you can listen to this program, this show, every single day when the World Cup in Brazil gets underway, talking about everything that is going on in the FIFA World Cup down in Brazil. Join me with Carter Krishnar. And we'll see what happens. It's just unbelievable what's going to happen this coming June. It's just going to be unbelievable what is going to happen this coming June. Because it's going to be, once again, the biggest stage in the world, the 2014 FIFA World Cup live in Brazil. It's great. It's just going to be absolutely great. But once again, the New York Red Bulls. I don't think they're in trouble. They just have to do a better job on the mental aspects of the game. You have all the talent in the world, but if you walk in there not focused at 100%, you know, it's just one of those things. It's just one of those things. And it's going to be crazy. It's going to be very, very crazy. Because it's going to be exciting to watch. Don't forget, everyone, tonight, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, the Portland Timbers under 23s will be playing against Arizona United in the second round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Head on over to either Arizona United's website or Portland Timbers website for the YouTube stream, or go to YouTube.com and just type it up, and I believe they will have something ready to go. Pardon me. So, in other words, it's going to be a lot of fun. And don't forget, tomorrow night, the Pittsburgh Riverhounds will be hosting the Red Bulls under-23 squad in the second round of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. You can definitely catch that on the Pittsburgh Riverhounds website or through YouTube. And this coming Friday, and there'll be the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup Round 2 review show. Join me as I talk to people who are the coaches. Coaches of this team, of these teams that have won their respective Open Cup matches. It's just unbelievable what's going on. And we can actually, we can do a quick preview with the time remaining here on the show to discuss what's going on as we go ahead and check out U.S. soccer once again. Don't forget the stream of the round, game of the round by U.S. soccer. They'll be streaming the Richmond rivalry, Richmond Kickers taking on Richmond, Virginia FC. So it's going to be a lot of interesting things, a lot of interesting stuff going on as we go ahead and we get to, as we discuss what's going on here. And I should be going to this website because we should already have the schedule coming up here. Go to thecup.us as they will have a link to the matches for those that are going to be broadcasted. And here we go. Once again, Portland Timbers tonight at the Arizona United SC, the under-23 squad of the Portland Timbers. Orlando City under-23s will be taking on Jacksonville United. This is tomorrow's schedule. Schwaben AC against the Dayton Dutch Lions. Baltimore Bohemians taking on Icon FC. Pittsburgh Riverhounds against the New York Red Bulls under-23s. Ocean City Nor'easters taking on the New York Greek American Atlas. Reading United taking on the Greater Binghamton FC side. The Greater Binghamton FC Funda. Richmond, Virginia taking on Richmond Kickers. Richmond, Virginia RVA FC. Lehigh Valley Sonic taking on the Harrisburg City Islanders. Carolina Dynamo hosting the Charlotte Eagles. Michigan Bucks hosting RWB Adria. Orlando City senior side taking on Ocala Stampede. Charleston Battery taking on the Panama City Beach Pirates. Chattanooga FC against Wilmington Hammerheads, Rochester Rhinos against the Western Mass Pioneers, Jersey Express against the Brooklyn Italians, Tulsa Athletics against Oklahoma City Energy FC, the Des Moines Menace USASA side taking on Real Colorado Foxes, excuse me, Austin Aztecs taking on the North Texas Rayados, Fresno Fuego against Orange County Blues FC, Laredo Heat against the Red Force, Ventura County Fusion against Sacramento Republic FC, the San Diego Flash against the PSA Elite, and finally, the USL Pros U number 2 squad LA Galaxy 2 against Cal FC. Excuse me. So that is your round 2 bracket. And then, of course, the winner, as we take a look here at the third round schedule, we're going to see the winner of the Pittsburgh Riverhounds Red Bulls under 23 side taking on the winner of the RWB Adria Michigan Bucks side. So if the New York Red Bulls under 23 side defeats Pittsburgh, they're going to be hosting the winner of the Michigan Bucks RWB Adria side on Wednesday, May 28th, or the winner of that match will go on a trip to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. A lot of scenarios here for this third round matchup. Of course, the North American Soccer League teams are involved in this matchup as well. We'll have to wait and see what's going to happen. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, what a lot of fun we're going to have here in the month of May. It's just been unbelievable to see what has been happening here. A lot of fun, a lot of excitement. But I'm telling you right now, it's worth every penny to come on over here on the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show so you can listen to everything that's been going on here involving the New York Red Bulls. So let me just say right now, as we're about to have a close on this show, I want to thank my guest, Steve Lepore from Awful Announcing, Juan Arango, South American football journalist extraordinaire, Frankie DeVay, also from Soccer Newsday, discussing about the Sacramento Republic. Join me this Friday as I review round 2 of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, the 2014 edition of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. It's going to be a lot of fun. Join me next Tuesday as we continue to discuss American soccer at its best. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you so much for listening to me tonight. And as always, please, I always beg of you to please enjoy your football. Thank you so much for listening tonight. Take care, everybody, and I'll talk to you next time this Friday and next Tuesday. Bye-bye for now.